For November the 22nd, 2019, we talk about control, overland, and we ask you what current design trends will feel like fads in the future. Welcome to Level 306. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one and welcome all. As opposed to going to any of you immediately, I need to kind of like maybe make a little bit of an announcement and speak for a party who is not here. Jala, if you're following her on Twitter or on the Level channel in the Slack, you'll notice that she is playing Danganronpa 3. recall that I didn't tell her to play this game, and she is having a full-on freak out. Full-on table flipping freak out about the things that are going on in that game. So it is likely that
entirely justified.
Yeah. Three wasn't my favorite entry in the series, and you know, regardless,
I still can't get past the screenshot she posted of the dude in the Nazi uniform.
Well, yeah, the ultimate deer leader or whatever his name is. Yeah, it's a thing. We're going to try and bottle that while it's still fresh. And because we're going to go into spoilers and stuff like that, I imagine our episode about that will be either a bonus level or a Duck Feed Presents. Just because she's going to need to get the poison out, and people have been expressing that they wanted to hear her flip some tables, that she wasn't so much flipping for a while there. So just going to put that out there and say she is in our thoughts and prayers as she goes through this difficult and trying time.
This bonus level will be for her, not for you. She needs the catharsis.
Sometimes.
That would be... I feel like that would be a good name for the podcast series, Her Thoughts and Prayers.
Oh, geez. So I just wanted to get that out of the way because that is, you know, it's just not a... It's hard to watch, you know? So there's that. All of us were here last time, so it's hard to know who to go to first. Ben, since you're geographically the furthest away from me, I will go to you first then. What's going on?
It's a fair point. Not much. I mentioned this before, but I had people in town over the weekend, so I got to do some more hosting in Seattle. So that was nice. Cool. There is now a, like, de facto place I take people when they come to visit, which is a dumpling place downtown. I think I probably even mentioned it before.
You did.
Yeah, that still holds up as being a really good place to take people for the first time if they're in town. So
nice. Yeah.
And it is like full on Seattle winter, completely gray every day and rainy every day. Mm. So I'm not as depressed
regular as Seattle.
It's actually really sunny in the summer. It's really nice in the summer, but I'm not as depressed as I thought I would be. Or right. Like, I don't feel depressed.
Only November.
Yeah, don't tell me that.
Victory a little early, dog. So yeah. So if you're listening to this, please tweet Ben pictures of the sun.
Mm-hmm. That's how that works, right? You don't need to buy one of those lamps. Just look at a picture of one of those lamps.
Mm-hmm. the combined with the placebo effect and it'll work.
I do
have a plant light in the other corner of my apartment, so maybe I'm getting some of the light from that and feeling okay.
Maybe it's spilling over. I mean, also, you know, it makes you feel good to take care of something, so you take care of the plant.
Yeah, or depending on Seattle's laws, maybe you could use plant light to, you know, grow something that makes one feel good.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, that's cool. You've talked these dumplings up a lot.
Yeah, it's called Din Tai Fung for anybody who might be around the area. Yeah, I don't know. I think the bigger thing is it's like family style meal, and I really like that eating like that with the right group of people. So.
Yeah, that's got to be good, especially if you're taking somebody who might not be entirely on board with like a dim sum dumpling kind of deal. So like, oh, you don't have to commit to one thing. We're just all gonna we're just all gonna pool our resources here. We can eat what we like. Yeah.
And I also am feeling very good about my ability to approximate how much a group of people can eat now, because I try and figure that out each time. And so, like, this time in particular, I was like, we should get this much. And then two of the people were like, we're going to put on these extra three things. And then, like, when we got done, there were, like, three extra dishes worth of food. And it's like,
all right. Yeah. No. That's on you.
That sounds to me like exactly the right amount.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that's cool. And you said this is the last time you're going to be entertaining for a little while.
Yeah, host mode can be turned off. That's I think the next couple of months I'll be visiting people rather than the other way around. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going by the heuristic that I established, David, since you're the second furthest away from me, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right. Kind of getting into the getting ready for the holidays kind of mode. I'm trying to figure out there's two seminars I really want to go to this weekend. So there's a seminar on using the steel mace as a exercise tool.
Okay.
And then there's a seminar. One of the local schools is hosting Dan Inosanto, who was one of Bruce Lee's students, and he is probably literally the most knowledgeable martial artist who has ever lived.
Hmm.
Just in terms of, like, he has probably studied and mastered more different martial arts than anyone in the past history has ever had the opportunity to. So he's kind of, you know, someone I've always wanted to train with. So trying to, you know, figure out what I'm going to go with.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Well, that's exciting. It's another good opportunity.
Yeah.
I feel like you got to go for the human element over the mace element.
Yeah. The problem is, like, me actually getting in shape is probably dramatically more relevant to my development as a martial artist than, you know, learning more techniques, especially since the downside of someone who has studied, you know, just dozens of martial arts is I have no idea whatsoever what he's actually going to decide to teach.
I feel like just his status means no matter what he's teaching, you're gonna learn something new and valuable.
That's true.
Very cool. Yeah. And then Dennis, how about you, since you are third?
Yeah. It's so embarrassing. I actually was going to talk about the steel mace for fitness class I took yesterday, but I guess I can't now.
No, you got scooped. No.
I did. I got mega scooped. No, single parenting right now. That's always fun. And by the time this comes out, anyone's listening to it, the campaign will be over. But the Deck of Wonders campaign for the print and play prototype on GoFundMe has wrapped up. In current time is about to wrap up, and couldn't be more pleased with the results between the fundraising and some other things. I've raised what I needed for taking this thing to the next stage and am full bore ahead with that. So I'm talking to, like, trademark people now in earnest, talking to artists in earnest, which I think I'd mentioned last week, but it's very nice to be able to send the email of, like, hey, I can actually say go now instead of just, like, you know, talk about how excited I am. it's nice to be able, because, you know, meeting someone new, especially in the business context of, like, oh, hey, I want you to commission work, but I don't have money yet, I'm coming back. Like, there's just, at least it weighs heavy on me to be able to come back and be like, look, see, I'm not full of shit. and so that feels really good. That's exciting. I'm sure I will keep everyone updated as the game progresses, although I think it will probably fade into the background for a couple months, just while the artists do their thing and my actions are more on the boring businessy side.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's amazing. Thank you so incredibly much to every single person that gave and bought the game. I hope you are enjoying it now. And if you have any questions, feel free to just reach out to me on Slack or Twitter. I'm excited to hear impressions of people who get the game truly blind without me coaching them through any of the rules. So thank you for being my guinea pig. And yeah. Thank you to everyone for your attention and your support where you were able to give it.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome to see. Awesome to see. Yeah. I don't have too much. The only like thing that I've got is, I don't know. I got Greta a new collar for an early gift for her adoption anniversary. So there are pictures there. There's a picture on social media if you want to see that. And I have been obsessed with watching this impeachment stuff, but this isn't that kind of show, so it doesn't need to land here.
Don't worry, it's not going to matter anyways.
It will matter as long as he is upset.
Yeah, I mean there is the possibility had a unexplained, just like sudden hour, multiple hour long doctor visit. So there is the possibility that just, you know, runs him into the grave.
I don't know. I'm not going to wish ill on a person. I would like him to be sad and angry. That is all I will commit to right now. Because you know what? His administration has made lots of people sad and angry, myself among them. But
see,
yeah,
I'm just fine with any form of out of office.
golf as much as you want, man. For fuck's sake, yeah, don't govern.
Someone just buy him a trip to Hawaii.
Yep. Oh, so yeah,
President, we desperately need your consultant on the consulting on the volcanic rocks. It is a matter of utmost importance.
Do you want to look at some fabric samples, sir? Yeah, so that's all that's going on here. Just me being, you know, me being like that. Happy birthday, Ben.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, belated. I
yeah.
That's right. He's senile by now. He doesn't remember.
Oh, no.
Let's get it there.
You know, yeah. I just wanted to put that on there. Happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, we've got the usual kind of show for you after this, you know, with the grind, the multiplayer, and then the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm just going to throw it to the room. Who has something new?
I have something new.
Okay, Ben, go ahead.
In between my salad burp, I played a small game this past week that just came out recently called Discolored. Mm. It is a tiny puzzle game that is kind of satisfying. I'll give it a lukewarm positive review, but it is a pretty game. It's a totally fine, like, $5 or less type game. I think it's on sale for like maybe like $10 or so. Maybe I think it's like $7 or $8 right now. Maybe there's a sale on it, maybe not. But the premise of the game is you start off at this like roadside diner. Everything's in black and white. And it's kind of like a Myst type game where you kind of walk around, try and mess around with things, and you kind of figure out different puzzles in the area. And eventually what happens is there's kind of like different stages where you find a piece that puts all of one color of red, blue, green into the hotel. Hmm. So if you find it and activate it, all the green that would be colored in the hotel will be activated. And so there's this really cool aesthetic to it as you're like solving puzzles for the game. And there's like really cool puzzle properties with it as well, where things will now be visible once you've activated the color green that weren't visible before, because they just might not show up, you know, or like vice versa, like by activating a color, it might lock certain things that weren't there before. So there's a little bit of a dance of like playing around with activating and unactivating these colors as you get them to change the effect they have on different mechanics. Yeah. It's just a cute game. So yeah, I would like a half thumbs up, three quarters thumbs up. If it goes on sale and it's cheap, totally worth it. Mm-hmm. I think it's only like maybe a 2-3 hour game, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very pretty.
Yeah. And, did you ever play Hue?
I did. I like this better than that because I only played Hue for like 10 or 15 minutes and kind of dropped off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Similar vibe, though?
Maybe the mechanics are similar. The style is definitely different, though.
Got it.
I would say that that's, Discolored is a prettier game or a more aesthetically pleasing game than Hue.
Very that's, cool. That's Hue's the one where you have to protect the forest, right?
Is that the HEW version of the game?
No, that's the U version, YEW.
I just know they say that only Hue can prevent forest fires.
Jesus Christ, David. Boo. Oh, wow. That peeled paint, man.
David has entered his new phase of training. He's trying to get hits taken out on himself.
I apologize for nothing.
No, you have nothing to apologize for. Yeah. Oh, man. So
does the game have a colorblind mode?
Ooh. It sounds good like question. A joke. It sounds like a joke, but I don't think that's that it is. I was actually wondering the same thing looking at the screenshots.
I know there's different forms of colorblindness, so I'm not sure if all are equally affected by this or not.
No.
I'm just wondering if you could like render a like a texture or something instead of a color.
I certainly know like different like other games do that sort of thing, or mm-hmm. like even like board games do that type of thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like it looks like a lot of this is being done with shaders, and a lot of the times you can actually select some games will have pretty robust color blindness options where it will shift specifically red and green to be a little bit closer to particular hues. If there's a lot of like precise mixing you have to do with colors, though, I can imagine that being a problem. I have no idea. It's a worthwhile question because I don't know. It's kind of rare that you see a game whose entire premise would lock out 1/10 of the population.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't know. But it looks very pretty. I feel like that's a shallow analysis, but even in the like desaturated mode, there's a lot of really like just like nice materials work going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very aesthetically pleasing. I will say that much. So cool. Yeah.
What else?
I have one other tiny game. Somebody gifted this for my birthday. I got a Heat Signature, ooh, which is tiny indie game. I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. Dennis and David, have you guys both played this one?
I have not.
No, right, but it's David. A game I've been following for a while.
It's by the guy who did Gunpoint.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I don't want to speak at length about it because I've only played like maybe half an hour of it or so. But kind of like the premise is you play like a person, like a bounty hunter type person or a mercenary type person. The aesthetic of the game is really a strong point. Like the idea is, there's like a home base on the map. You take a mission that's somewhere in the galaxy. The galaxy is like all like one continuous like XY plane. And you control like the thrust of your ship. And so like when you leave like the main hub or whatever, you just start flying in the direction of where the target is. It kind of shows what direction it should be. There's an arrow on the map. And the further you get from your home base, the more the map pulls out. And I don't know if this description is doing the game justice or not, but it's a really cool flow of like you're just flying directly to where your target is. There's like breaks, but it makes you like dock with the ship that you're chasing after. So like that's the first part of the mission. And then once you dock with it, like there's cameras around ships. So you have to like dock with it in a way that you don't go through the cameras. So that's like actually a fun like little mini game like to get started is you have to like you're playing with like relative velocity, right? Because the ship that you're chasing is going one mm-hmm. direction. And so if you start going a different direction, you can kind of like start to get thrown in the cameras and that could go really wrong. So like that part's fun. When you dock with the ship, then you're given the inside of the ship's exposed. And it's basically a series of rooms that are connected by hallways. And you'll have like a gun based weapon and a like melee based weapon. They might be lethal. They might be non-lethal. And there's like, it's kind of hard to describe, but you're, I mean, the goal is to kind of take out everybody on the ship or maybe rescue a certain person. There's a certain level of, like, you can do things stealthily or you can just try and blast everyone. Once you start killing people, there's, like, a timer that you need to take everyone out on the ship. Mm-hmm. Or, like, people will come to the ship and then, like, I guess it's game over. I haven't seen what happens with that yet. But there's, like, interesting mechanics where if you get shot, you kind of get, like, knocked out or you go unconscious. And so in that time, someone can just pick you up and throw you out of the ship.
No ticket.
And so then a new timer starts with how long it will take before you become unconscious. And so then you have a much more stressful minigame of you have to get your ship to fly to where your body is and pick you up before you die. And so like all those mechanics are really fun. It's really fast paced. It's very, like, seamless, the action, you know. If you die, it just goes back to the hub world and they're like, we're drinking to this person tonight who died because of this, you know, and then you pick a new mercenary to be, and then you pick up another mission.
Yeah.
I played enough
in a tavern, remembering your old friend. Now you meet in a tavern, remembering your old friend. That's got a really nice kind of Groundhog Day kind of feel to it.
So the flow of it's cool. I played it enough to kind of get the flow of it to do that. I do want to play it a little bit more to see if there's any more, like, midterm to long-term goals to go after. There is kind of a robust, I think there's like 6 different shops at the store with stuff you can buy to upgrade your people. But one thing I'm not sure of is if there's going to be any persistence or not. Like, I don't know if you just do, like, runs with a single person, and then if they die, they die, and then all that progress is lost. I haven't played it enough to figure that part out. But yeah, so far it's pretty good, though. It seems like a fun kind of short bite-sized game that you can kind of pick up and put down.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the fact that this game, along with Gunpoint and Tactical Breach Wizards, is apparently referred to as the Defenestration Trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big part of Gunpoint, that's for sure.
That is the thing.
About Tactical Breach Wizards on the show?
I think there was briefer end boss.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That is very apropos.
Yeah, I guess I did bury the lead of this. There are windows on the ships that you can shoot, and then I believe it sucks people out. I don't know how that works with you, like how far away you need to be from it to not be affected by that. But
you probably have magnet boots. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
is it defenestration if it's out into the void of space?
It's a window. You know,
like,
as long as it's through a window.
Defenestration?
Ooh.
Come on.
It's better than you, so.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, no.
Question tonight. What happened?
I have no idea what makes tonight this special. We are very punchy. Yeah, it's a... No, it's in my head, I thought Heat Signature was more of like a tactical kind of thing, but by your description and by the by the video I'm looking at, it seems like it continues from Gunpoint, like non-conventional snappy stealth game.
Yeah, there's like frequent use of the pause button. And like it's pretty easy to dodge a shot right now if it comes for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the stakes are higher than that. If you mess up once, you probably die and then lose all your stuff. So,
yeah. Yep.
But yeah, so far, good. Style is great.
Very cool.
So there's another game that's actually fairly similar I've played. I'm trying to get my library to figure out.
Duskers?
That might be it.
I'm trying to think of top-down games about breaking into space things, but that's more of a slow, like explicitly tactical kind of deal.
And programming is the main gameplay element.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. Like the visual style is similar to FTL.
Yeah, a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like there's some kind of VAT system going on as well, where you pause time to make decisions. Is that the case?
Oh yeah. And it is quite frequent. So like I mentioned before, there's 2 different things you have. You have like a gun based thing and a melee based thing. Both of those have cooldowns. So it's like you pause and you look to see how much you have left before you can like swing at someone, and you try and like dance around the room until that cools down, and then like smash someone with a hammer or whatever.
Yeah.
As a side note, the game I was thinking of was Cryptark.
Okay. I don't recognize it, but oh yeah, there we go. I recognize the art. I did not recognize the name. Yeah. Did you have anything else, Ben?
That is all.
Apologies. Rogue Legacy was the name I was thinking of, not Groundhog Day, for some reason.
I mean, there's similar ideas.
Yeah. So similar repetitious stuff, yeah.
That is all I got, though.
Cool. I'll do one because I've got one that's relatively new. I've got a new one, and I've got an oldie, an old favorite. Starting with the new one, I played the first hour of Control.
Okay,
nice.
Yeah,
spelled with a K.
No. Control, just spelled the normal way. This is the new game, not new. It's the most recent game by Remedy. Came out several months ago. Remedy, the team behind Alan Wake, Max Payne, Quantum Break, etc.
And this is the surveillance themed game, right?
I don't know that it's surveillance themed.
Observer
or observation. No, so Observer is the Layers of Fear team doing the cyberpunk.
What's Control?
Control. It is similar to Alan Wake. It is a supernatural third person shooter. You're playing as a young woman who is investigating. She is trying to figure out and learn about this agency that was involved in an incident, a government agency that was involved in an incident in her hometown that cost the life of her brother. The Federal Bureau of Control. She goes to the headquarters. It is empty. Everybody is possessed. Oh, and it turns out she's the new director who was chosen by the board, who happens to be a supernatural entity that looks over all of this. The entire thing is themed after, are you guys familiar with SCP? Secure, Contain, Protect, or something like that?
I keep meaning to highly recommend that to you, Cole.
Yeah, no, I've read like specific SCPs. So SCP is like a genre of online horror fiction. You know, like more online people than me would call it like creepypasta or whatever. But the idea is there's this agency that, you know, documents and contains anomalous creatures, locations, or artifacts. So like it is just a way to like write spooky stories that are incredibly short, and like some of the spookiness comes from a very clinical governmental procedural approach to like writing about it, while also like redacting certain things. So you know,
so
you
it's just, like X-Files fan fiction.
Yeah, kind of like that. Like X-Files is a good way to do is a good way to sum that up. But yeah,
I posted as a side note one of my favorite, just because to give my short sort of plug for it. I think it highlights one of my favorite things is the fact that with SCP the tone really varies.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, super, super dark to just kind of silly and weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and this one kind of shows that, and it also has, some really good use of the redaction you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking about,
I guess, for viewers, it's SCP-1000, which is, Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm. but describing Bigfoot in the manner of an SCP, which is very funny, good.
Well, and then my favorite thing is you get through the, you know, it's the entire thing is a, you know, like you said, this SCP description of Bigfoot. And then there's a drop down that's like, you know, this information only for people with security clearance, whatever. Mm-hmm. You expand it, and it basically starts by saying the entire previous article was a lie. You know, the actual reality is that you know, Bigfoot was a member of a advanced race that humanity basically screwed over in prehistory in order to develop technology and is now like coming back for revenge. And so, like, yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry. That was totally off topic. I highly recommend.
Yeah, yeah. But like, it is very, very transparently kind of, like, picking up on that, like, just on that kind of theme, to the point where, like, one of the first documents that you find in the game, you know, like, instead of finding manuscript pages, you find, you know, just documents that have some of these in there. But, like, one of them is, you know, you're in the office, you know, the reception, and there's, like, a list of forbidden objects, and there's like, oh, you know, smartphones, number two pencils, or objects that are archetypal or totemic in nature. And then it was like ketchup bottles or bananas, etc., as though there was a pattern on that. So just like a bunch of like off-kilter weird stuff that lives almost entirely in tone and presentation as opposed to subject matter. Plays very similar to Alan Wake. You know, instead of fighting the Taken, like the townspeople who have been overwhelmed by the dark force, there is this like extra dimensional force called the Hiss that is coming through and taking people over. And at least for the section that I played, you're mostly like trying to clear out the headquarters so you can use it again. But the shooting is very good. There's an interesting kind of thing. In most shooters nowadays, your health recovers automatically, and you've got to worry about your ammo and, you know, pick up and make sure. In this one, it's the other way around. Your gun that you get from the old director, it's alive. It is an artifact of its own, and as you empty it, you know, when you empty it, it regenerates its own bullets that you shoot, things like that. So like, instead of your health dictating the flow of combat, you actually, like, you know, need to worry about your clip. Like, you can't just reload that, you have to, you know, wait for it to recover. And that is just an interesting inversion of the usual rhythm of play.
I was gonna say my first reaction to that is negative, because that it takes away your ability to be active or aggressive should you so choose. You know, if you're waiting for your health to regenerate, you know, you still always have the choice to you know, go after someone. Whereas this, it sounds like if your ammo's gone, then you're just out of verbs. Is that inaccurate?
Very inaccurate, because it turns out that this is like kind of low key, not a reboot or a remake, but it is an advancement of, do you remember the PS2 and Xbox games PsyOps, the Mindgate conspiracy?
Oh, hell yes.
Oh, yeah. So very early on, and, you know, this is early spoilers, but, you know, you find particular objects of power. And one of them, the first one that you get is a floppy disk that is somehow possessed or altered and is throwing things about at random. You get it and merge with it, and you get one of the most kinesthetically satisfying telekinesis powers in games that I've felt so far. It is so snappy. It is so snappy that, like, you can take people out on the draw of the telekinesis, not just the throw. So, like, if somebody is shooting, if somebody is standing there and shooting at you, you can do a yank, and it will knock them out. It'll kill them. The object will kill them on the way to you. So there are more of these powers that you get in addition to having this, this weapon that recovers as it goes along. And it comes from a totemic floppy disk, which is very fun.
So just because you cannot shoot does not mean you can't fight.
Yes. Yeah. So you're going to be mixing these things together. And when I say that, like, oh, the ammo takes time to recover automatically, yeah, I mean, you're going to be pausing for, you know, maybe like two, three measures, something like that. Very, very, very short time.
Very cool.
Yeah. But yeah, like, it's super, you know, super, quick, responsive, very fast shooting. If it definitely feels of the Alan Wake or Max Payne kind of vibe, just in terms of the play, it is also, kind of neat. It continues the Remedy style thing of mixing FMV and regular, computer in engine animation. Like at one point you find you start watching like a corporate safety video. And like that is just, a projection of full motion video, like real actors. So it continues that just kind of off kilter presentation that Remedy has been known to do. I'm trying to think of other stuff. Go ahead.
Does it have any specific like story within a story the way, Alan Wake had the Twilight Zone stuff and Max Payne had the Twin Peaks?
Not that I've seen. I've only played like the first hour or so.
Okay.
Yeah. But the story looks cool. The kind of like aesthetics and presentation are pretty engaging. Like areas that this Hiss has taken over are like reconfigured. Like the actual like architecture and design of them are altered. And when you clear one of these out, you can see it like reconfigure back to its original spot. Like whole buildings or areas will be basically shift around as you go through them. And I'm way into that as well. Yeah, I think that it's super cool, and having played Alan Wake, relatively recently and been a little bit underwhelmed in the revisiting. It is cool to go into this and see that, like, yeah, they've actually like made a really good and varied loop. Like that, like they can do that.
Hmm. What are you playing this on?
PS4.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I got it on sale on PS4, so. I think my PC could run it, but I don't know. It seems like a game I'd like to play in my living room.
Yeah. And also have a guaranteed quality level for it.
Yes. Yeah. Any other questions about Control?
No.
Excited to see how far it strays from the facility.
Yeah, I would be.
I want to briefly ask, has anyone played Death Stranding or the new Star Wars game?
No, I installed both of them over the weekend, but aforementioned stuff, not necessarily.
I know. Like I've been playing Outer like Planets as well. I didn't talk about it since I haven't done much with it, but it's like I feel like there's too much content out right now. I can't get all the games I want to play.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
That's the way of things now.
Yeah. So the old favorite that I have, is that I don't know how much we're going to talk about this, but it's up to you guys, I suppose. But, for X Crank Live, just this past weekend, I started streaming, season one of Telltale's The Walking Dead.
Nice.
Ooh. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that game has been out for 7 years. And I only played it, the once. So it is fun to go back to it. Man, there are a lot of characters in that are really fun to hate.
Is that Larry?
Fucking Larry, man.
Yeah, dude. That dude sucks.
What a dick.
Way to get writing for that character.
Lily's not too great either. But Ben, if you end up watching as I finish this out, I don't want you to take offense how often I say, God damn it, Ben. Because Ben and that is a real fuck up. Unlike you, you are not a fuck up. Again, I'm not talking about you when I say, God damn it,
Ben. At least Ben isn't Duck.
Man. But yeah, like, so I did episode one on Friday and episode two on Saturday. Episode one has some issues. They clearly they understood it to be a different kind of game than it would ultimately end up being. So there are like puzzles and just like weird. It feels like out of rhythm or out of step with like what it would come to be known for. And it
feels like a pilot episode.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very good way to put it, actually. And then episode two is unassailable. That's the one where you're starving in the hotel. And the people from the dairy bring you over and offer you a bunch of food. And it is not a good idea to eat the food.
It is one of the best bottle episodes of anything.
Yeah.
Where does that one end?
That ends with the dairy being overwhelmed by zombies and you returning to the motel.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I also am now remembering with you talking about it, the very opening of chapter two being a real like tonal setting for how that chapter is going to go. And that being like very different from chapter one.
Isn't that walking around and checking on everyone though?
No. I believe it's in the woods.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
You're
out in the woods hunting, but then you find somebody like it's the people from the school. The professor got trapped in a bear trap that was modified. So there was no release. Zombies are bearing down on you and you have to decide whether or not to cut off the guy's leg. Regardless, he dies. And that's how you find out when you take him back to the motel and he turns. That's how you find out that you don't have to be bit to turn in the world of The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would be a deal breaker for me.
What do you mean that would be a deal breaker?
Too scary?
No, it doesn't make sense.
I think most people in that universe are pretty pissed about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, true. But no, I'm just saying, like, at the point where zombies become magic, it's just like, well, yeah, there's, you know, now literally no rules, so...
I want my zombies to make sense.
Fireballs at you.
No, the there are rules to it. They don't get any more outlandish than zombie stories, you know, usually or sometimes get. I think like that is the only stretch that they have. Everything else is, you know, they you know, you need to destroy their brains, and you know, eventually they will rot to the point where they can't move. Like other than that, like that is the only. But like I think that's the only way that they step out of line. It's not like House of the Dead zombies where they're literally throwing fireballs at you. Yeah.
That's one that makes sense. Can you poison
them? That is my bugbear with zombie things is unless they're just going to blatantly violate the laws of thermodynamics, you know, poison should work.
I don't know. Did you really not know that was the that was the thing in The Walking Dead that you didn't have to be a bit to turn? Oh, huh. Yeah. Sorry, I took it for granted that like everybody knew when they looked at that.
I'm glad I know because that keeps me from like wasting time on it.
What happens if you kill yourself by shooting yourself in the head?
Then you don't come back because the brain's gone.
All right. Okay. So there's a loophole.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a really, you know, big dramatic beat with that in the first episode. There's a woman who was bit and you get to choose whether or not to lend her your gun to avoid turning.
What was the setting for that?
It's like when you are going with Carly and somebody else when you're going with Carly and Glenn to check out the hotel and clear it out, you hear somebody who's obviously in trouble and she's saying, hey, go away because you were a bit, but then she sees her gun and you have to choose.
Oof. Did any of you ever follow up any of the like side comic stuff they did for Left 4 Dead with all that stuff?
No, I didn't.
One of the just like, why don't we be an asshole to our characters thing we do is, what is the girl in Left 4 Dead? What's her name?
I forget. I don't know.
I forget. But basically, like, part of her backstory is basically that her father got bit early in the outbreak and basically, you know, ordered her to shoot him so he wouldn't turn. And then, like, much later, they released a comic that, you know, lays out, you know, kind of the end of the series. And among other things, they find out that, you know, they're all immune and that immunity is passed through the father's side.
Oh geez, so he wasn't gonna turn,
right?
Oops.
It's Ooh. Just like, yeah, that adds nothing to the story other than just like you hate your characters.
Oh, I think you're talking about Zoe. Zoe is the
Zoe. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to finishing out the season, and we'll see how much of an appetite I have to maybe get back to season 2 and 3 later on. Not going to do them all in a row just because, you know, lockout. But yeah. Yep. And that's all that I have.
Good stuff.
David and Ben, or David and Dennis, fight it out. Who's going to go?
All right. Rock, paper, scissors, shoe.
Well, I have a new game to talk about.
Okay. All right.
Okay, go.
Does that trump you? Yeah. Rock, new game, scissors.
Don't use the T word anymore.
So yeah, I like I mentioned, I got the trial for Apple Arcade, and that brought with it lots and lots of options. And I noticed there was a mobile version of the game Overland.
Oh, which yeah.
Yeah, the like turn-based survival apocalypse sim that happens on very small grids.
Yeah, no, it's like it is about, what's the game, Into the Breach size grids, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's got kind of a roguelike format where you start at the beginning and are working your way from the East Coast to the West Coast. And just kind of get as far as you can. It looks like there might be an option to reload saves versus starting a new game, but come on, we all know you got to do it in one go. So this at first blush seems right up my alley. The grid-based combat, the kind of difficulty of the game, the setting, all that stuff. It's got kind of a lo-fi art aesthetic. Very blocky, and not dissimilar from some of the stuff I saw from Kentucky Route Zero.
Yeah, it's kind of like a similar, like, flat or gradient shaded kind of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what I think of the game yet. I've done two attempts, and I haven't gotten past the first roadblock either time. So it's roughly like 3 or 4 levels and then a roadblock that's like acts as a boss, I guess, which is particularly hard to get through. And there's a steep learning curve for the game. It doesn't explain anything about itself to you in terms of how enemies work, how items work, inventory systems, even how to use some of the items is just confusing to me, and it's not tutorialized at all. But layer on top of that, it does not feel like they did enough to customize it for mobile. This feels like the PC version of the game dropped into a touchscreen interface, and a lot of the setup just does not feel conducive.
There's discoverability problems in terms of the interface, yeah. Right?
Well, so that, you know, frequently there will be tiny items, literally a stick on the ground, that, you know, you're supposed to tap on. And it's hard to hit like perfectly the stick, especially when it's lying essentially next to the border of the square you're in. It can be very hard to hit the stick instead of hitting the square you're in again and bringing up a menu, or hitting, God forbid, the square next to you and wasting a move action moving away from the stick that you were trying to pick up. And so I've had several mishaps, I guess you'd call it, along those lines. Mm-hmm. In general, just the icons, the things that you're discovering are very, very tiny on the map. And it gets to the point where you can tell well enough what they are, but they're just small enough that it's super easy to miss. And I don't know if that's just, you know, as I get more familiar with the game, it will become easier to recognize or what, but certainly the first impression is not great. But probably the thing that I found the most frustrating, and this could just be conventions built into my own mind that I, you know, other people won't have, but to switch between characters, you know, you can have 2 or 3 characters that you're controlling at once, and you can swap between them at any point. To switch between them, you need to click the like icon of all the characters at the bottom left of the screen. See, I'm even saying click. You need to tap mm-hmm. that icon. And you are not able to tap directly on the characters to switch to them. which has caused me to tap where I shouldn't and waste moves just innumerable times. For whatever reason, it is built into my brain that if I want to control a character, I should be able to tap on them and like swap control over to them. Which makes intuitive sense, at least to me, but it is very much not how the game works. And it causes a lot of heartburn. So I think all of that is mobile port problems, you know? And I imagine if I was playing this game on PC, I would feel much more charitable towards it. I think a lot of the problems that I'm having would be solved. That said, it was free on Apple Arcade and it's $24 on PC. So
wow.
I'm either going to struggle through playing this thing on mobile or just give it a pass for now.
Yeah. What you're describing is kind of the big reason why I haven't jumped on this on Apple Arcade. It's possible, I could just play it on the Apple TV, I think, with a PS4 controller. Because it's available on there as well, but it seems like a real PC style kind of game. And just whenever there's been this kind of port in the past, it has been a bummer to hit up against those problems.
I've been super underwhelmed with Apple Arcade. Like Grindstone is and remains a complete gem, like absolutely amazing. And most of my time playing games on my phone has gone to that as of late. Mm-hmm. But everything else I've played is either a completely generic, app store game that I would be getting for free anyway, or it feels like a clumsy port a la Overland.
Yeah.
So, it's the world of living games. They can always, sand off some of the rough edges. I don't know how much they'll actually be incentivized to do that.
Right.
But in its current form, you have a couple things driving negative momentum to enjoy the game.
Yeah.
So have you tried any games on a computer?
I have not, and I don't even know where I would go. I guess my only computer that would connect to this is my work computer.
Yeah.
So I don't really know where I'd go to do that. Or even if I guess I'd have to like download the App Store on PC or something like that, which feels awkward.
I think you need to upgrade. So I don't think it's available on PC. And I think on Mac you would need to upgrade to Catalina, which fuck you. I'm not doing that until you iron out those issues, please.
Speaking of living launches that get patched up.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
So yeah, and besides, if I'm on PC, I'm going to be playing some sweet, sweet cycle action. Come on now.
I know that's a segue.
But yeah, that's.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but if you have more questions about Overland, I'd love to hear them.
I don't know about Overland. I just like but before the Apple Arcade trial runs out, I would recommend checking out What the Golf at the very least. That would be a good use of time.
I did see that was there.
Yeah.
Did you play that on a mobile device?
Yeah, I played it on my iPad.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, good. It works great.
Yep, I saw that. I also want to try. There's like a rhythm game.
Yeah, no, I know which one you're talking about.
But it's like on all the lists of games you need to play. Mm-hmm. The problem is just when am I on my phone that I can have my volume on?
Oh, true. Yeah.
The phone is the break at work or the ambient hanging out with family.
Right. Yeah. It would be. It'll be unwise. Yeah. Unwise.
I could try to like intuit the sound.
Maybe
just get the groove down. If the visuals are strong enough, I bet you I could. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. So yeah, I've got two assignment play things to get to in the next 2 weeks or so. Otherwise, Apple Arcade is not like the the barn burner must have.
Yeah.
At least not in my experience.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't have any other questions about Overland.
Cool. I segued over to the cycle, but I don't know that I have that much new to say about it. I would love your thoughts, guys. I want you to tell me if I'm a bad person or not.
You are. Yes.
on the contrary, if you have the self-awareness and introspection to stop to ask, then you are not as bad as you could be.
Ah, okay. Well, that's working in my favor then. So pacting is like one of the big things that makes makes the cycle unique, that when you're playing in solo mode, your only verb to interact with someone is not shoot. You can actually offer them an alliance, and then the two of you can work together for the rest of the round. However, at any point you can break that pact. And I've had it done to me, and it's usually just when we wander off to different areas of the map, and it's like, okay, clearly we're not working together anymore. I shouldn't split my resources with this person who's not really helping me. I've never had it done maliciously, but I have taken up the habit of doing it maliciously to others.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah, this is I'll confess my sins here in order of just shittiness to the other person. You know, when you pact with someone, you split the reward points for the contracts that you're doing, or at least some of the contracts that you're doing. And so I have on occasion, you know, we've set up a mineral drill. We've fought off the enemies together. And I've just made sure that towards the end of the waves of enemies, the drill is finishing up its work. I kind of jump up to the high ground, let the other guy polish off the final mooks and mobs that are coming after the drill, and then just break pact. Hey, I'm going to take that for myself, and you can either try to fight me in a weakened state, or, you know, pound sand. I'll take these points for myself. So that's what I've done.
Wow.
That's not great. The worst, however, is when you kill people, you get notoriety. And if you get too much notoriety, you get a bounty put on your head. Of note, when you are pacted, only the person that actually lands the killing blow gets notoriety. And so I have pacted with someone, gone through a couple gunfights with other people with them, and just made sure that they landed the killing blow until they got a bounty put on their head, and then broken the pact and killed them to take the bounty.
Wow.
I mean, I don't think that there's any... Yeah. I see no problems with this. It's built into the system of the game. People should expect it.
It is, and I think that's the problem. Oh, go ahead, David.
So I would say, and this is something we've actually talked about because we've been playing together a lot.
I'm doing this all to David.
As you do. I don't think it's a problem that happens. However, I think currently they don't have enough. I don't think they currently have enough. I don't know, verbs or like depth to the system to make it interesting, in that, you know, there's no real way for, like, if you do it to someone, for them to punish you. So, and, you know, just in general, there's very little way, you know, being the person who initiates combat gives a huge, huge advantage in this game. And so there's very little way for, you know, doing an aggressive playstyle to potentially be, you know, harmful. Likewise, if you either don't intend to pact with someone, or if you're already pacted with someone else, there's literally no way you can, you know, or basically everything becomes zero sum. You know, there's no way that you can, like, have a scenario where by working together you can potentially accomplish more than you could separately. So I think this, you know, kind of creates a situation where, instead of, you know, kind of what I described is, you know, I think the ideal way this would play out is it would all be sort of a big game of prisoner's dilemma, but it ends up being a situation where it's almost always in your best interest to just betray the other person.
Just like in the prisoner's dilemma.
Yeah. Well, except in prisoner's dilemma,
there's a spectrum to it.
I was being flip.
It is in the prisoner's dilemma. It isn't in the repeated prisoner's dilemma.
Right.
Well, yeah. So I'm strictly speaking, I'm talking iterative prisoner's dilemma. Like, so there's no scenario where, you know, as a specific example, and maybe I've mentioned this, I forget what I've talked with Dennis versus here, but, you know, one of the things is, you know, when you down someone, you then don't necessarily have to actually kill them. You can just, you know, leave them alone. Eventually they'll, heal themselves. And, you know, I think an ideal situation would be sort of one where, you know, you could potentially create a scenario where, you know, I've currently, demonstrated that I'm too powerful for you to, take me out. Therefore, although you've demonstrated you're willing to do that, therefore I can't trust you. But as long as I am confident that I can remain more powerful for you than you, it's in my best interest to let you live and work together. And, that then would create scenarios where it's like, if we do work together, do I need to, make sure that the other person is successful, but not too successful? Otherwise, they might turn on me again. Like, I think that's ideally what I'd like to see from the game. And I feel like it doesn't really exist yet.
I think it's a sad story that Journey figured out years ago that you had to take away all the power people can have in games if they want to communicate with one another in a positive way.
Yeah, that said, I've definitely had situations where pacting is the first thing I do. Like, I don't engage hostily, and it's worked out really well. I also can think of at least one time where someone has had me dead to rights, like ambushed me, shot me down to next to no health, and then offered me a pact. And then we play together for the rest of the game. That. So
I don't get that behavior. Like, I've even had scenarios where, you can die once and come back, where they've outright killed me once and then offered me a pact. I have no idea, like, what the thought process is behind that.
Well, pseudo there, your consequences of dying a second time are much higher than theirs, since they still have their respawn. And so it is a little bit like, hey, I've got the power here, because if shit goes down, yeah, you might be able to kill me, but your stakes are way higher than mine. So I think the system is in there, maybe a little bit more than you're giving it credit for, but, in casual informal play, it's not really being leveraged to its fullest. I would like to see something where... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, what I would like to see is the option to do things like, for example, purposely choose abilities that basically expect for mutually assured destruction. So, being able to, having... some sort of ability that, releases a pheromone that summons, multiple, dozens of wardens, which are the, most powerful PvE enemy in the game. And, likewise, having some way to display that to other characters so that you could, in effect, say, like, if you attack me, I'm willing to lose to make sure that you don't win.
The idea I had was I would like to see some kind of benevolence system where if you down someone but let them live, like let them regenerate, so they go if you go into down but not out mode, as long as you can survive in that mode for 20 seconds, you can come back without even needing to use your respawn. I think if you do that to someone and then maybe you need to be able to like run up to them and touch them or something like that to prove that you could have taken them out if you wanted to. Maybe when they, come back, they've got a 50% debuff against you so that, they can still play. They can go there, they can go their way, but they're not going to be a threat to you. And you don't have to gain the notoriety of killing them. I could see that being a really interesting system as well. By the way, this game is in early access alpha, so it has a ton of room to evolve and incorporate these things as it goes. So I think all the stuff we're conjecturing about is not just like, oh, I wish it would have this and it doesn't. It's like, I wish it would have this and they're actively working to figure it all out. So right. I feel good about that.
Totally.
So I have two things. You talk about mutually assured destruction. It's possible that you could invest in an ability that if you are killed by a person that you at any point were pacted with, it blows up. You create such a large explosion that everybody on the map is killed. Second,
like a dead man switch.
Yeah, like the Predator has. the other one would be some kind of reputation indicator, where if you are a betrayer, that sticks onto your character's model.
Oh, that's
in
good.
Some way. Yeah.
So that people can understand. Even like game to game.
Yes. Yeah. You'd so be like, you know, just persistently, and there are things that you can do to get rid of it. You know, be it like a particular color on your character's model, or like an icon that marks you as a betrayer, things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exciting stuff. It's fun to watch this game evolve. So I'm all these are really fun ideas, and the devs have been, you know, receptive in the Discord. So fun stuff to think about.
Yeah. Just, you know, take my ideas to them, post it in the Discord and tell them it came from me, and they'll know what to do.
you joke, but I've done that with some of David's ideas. They've gotten traction. Good stuff. Yeah.
The cycle.
And that's the cycle. Nothing else to really talk about. The one cutesy thing is Luke and Milo were asking tonight, can we play the monster truck game with the invisible cars? I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? The monster truck game, invisible cars. And I eventually figured out they meant Trackmania Turbo, which for whatever reason, they've decided the cars in that are monster trucks. They're not.
Okay.
And the invisible cars are like the ghosts to show like gold time or personal best time.
Oh.
And so when I race, they will declare at the beginning, basically they're betting on how well I'll do. One will declare, I'm the invisible car, and the other will declare, I'm the real car. And then they'll trash talk each other throughout the match.
That's very funny.
I can't deal with that pressure, you know? I can better my time, but...
Are these your previous runs or someone else's previous runs?
These are your personal best. Or you can choose gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal runs that are pre-programmed. At this point, pretty much everything I play is my own personal best because I'm all that, right? No. So it's a lot of previous runs from myself.
Nice.
But yeah, so I played that for their entertainment after figuring out what the hell they were talking about.
The monster truck game with the invisible cars. I mean, like, I don't know. I'd play a game that matched that description, even if it wasn't Trackmania.
But yeah, that was a grand old time. So that is me.
Very cool. And logic would dictate the process of elimination. David, it is your turn.
Yeah, so the other thing I've really been doing much of is continuing on with Far Cry New Eden. So according to the game, I'm 77% of the way through. So, you know, just kind of coming into the home stretch, and I'm actually really enjoying it.
Oh, you kind of came around on it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, I've been thinking about it a lot about, you know, why do I feel like this game definitely works a lot better than Far Cry 5 and in some ways better than 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it is, you know, it wouldn't be accurate to call it a grim game or a dark game or anything like that. You know, it takes a pretty light, you know, tone to, you know, the whole thing. Like, innately to, you know, having a post-apocalyptic story means you have to have, you know, this narrative be like, oh, resources are constrained, you know, sort of those sorts of things. You know, otherwise it kind of defeats the purpose. And I feel like having that little bit of, I guess, you know, seriousness or whatever, at least to me, offsets the kind of innate silliness of what Far Cry's become in a way that makes it a lot more palatable.
Okay.
The other thing I think is there's often a situation to which, at least to me, some of the characters that in the previous games were just kind of, you know, silly or macho or, you know, that sort of, you know, just like, oh yeah, blowing things up is cool,
mm-hmm.
have been given, you know, at least a certain degree to which they're, you know, actually have, you know, motivations and, you know, kind of problems they're dealing with, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of enough to kind of tip the scale over to their over the top, you know, antics being at least somewhat heroic. So, you know, one of them that actually I liked even in five was Nick Rye and his wife, Kim, who are, I think I mentioned last time, there's a character that basically was not born at the point of the previous game and, you know, is now one of your allies in this game. And so that's all that family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the previous game, he was kind of just like a fairly, you know, redneck stereotype. Like his role was basically to, you know, fly around a fighter jet or a fighter plane in a semi-responsible manner and, you know, blow stuff up.
Okay.
And this time around, like at the start of the game, he's basically has been captured and, you know, held hostage for several months. And so there's a lot more, you know, degree to which, like, oh, he's had to deal with, you know, being tortured and, you know, trying to escape and mm-hmm. wondering if he'll see his family again, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The other thing that I just always kind of liked about those characters is in the previous game, initially, he, you know, says he's not going to join you because, you know, it would be irresponsible for him to basically risk his life when his, you know, starting a family, his wife's pregnant, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And his wife basically, you know, insists that he basically needs to do the right thing and, you know, fight for what's right, yeah. Which I like just because it kind of subverts the usual trope of, you know, kind of those roles being reversed. Mm-hmm. Also, his wife is now the head of the resistance movement, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I've really been enjoying that. On the downside, something that frustrates me in, and this is something the series has done repeatedly, but one, the game eventually gets into you ultimately this time around ally with the cult from five.
Right.
And that unfortunately gets into, you know, brings up the fact that like the ending of five was just utter shit.
Okay.
And just they've got this weird thing going on where in some way they're kind of convinced that, I don't know, the cult has a point or that, you know, the cult would have been fine if, you know, you just hadn't interfered in five or something.
I mean, the cult was like nationalist religious bigots, right?
And was straight up killing people. Like, across five and New Eden, like, it seems like it's very clear they want to do, you know, some sort of like spec ops the line, like, oh, by getting involved, you actually made things worse, or like a Bioshock Infinite, like you solve all your problems with violence, therefore, like, you know, that just creates a cycle of violence. But the problem is, like, the way the cult actually behaves, there's not really any other viable option. And similarly, they've kind of got sort of the Dr. House effect in that it's like, yeah, you know, theoretically you can claim you were right because, you know, you correctly predicted things, except that there was actually no justification for you being able to predict anything. You just did it via, you know, literal deus ex machina.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weird.
But I mean, but like, this is the like non-canonical joke sequel to the main game. So like,
that's the issue is that, you know, there's two endings to five. The basically the options are you either like abandon all of your allies who have been brainwashed, you know, via drugs by the cult, and just say like, "Hey, this isn't my problem," and leave, or you save them, and which leads to like this timeline. And so, like, it appears that this is the canonical timeline.
Huh.
Which, going back to the question of, like, is this one timeline? The problem with that is that, according to that timeline, the world ends in, what, 2017? Except that Far Cry 1 takes place in 2025. And it's established that at least Herc knows the main character from Fallout 1, or Fallout 1, Far Cry 1.
Really?
No, so, Fallout 1, it's a universe crossover now.
Yeah. But then the other thing that's a little frustrating is they have a tendency to basically force you into cutscenes where you are powerless against the main villains, the twins, and they will, you know, do something off, you know, kill a hostage to prove a point, or you know, something like that, beat you up, that sort of thing. But they're in scenarios where if the game wasn't giving them plot armor, there's no way you couldn't wipe the floor with them. So,
yeah.
I mean, again, it's just weird overall. Like, I'm having a lot of fun. It's, you know, the end result justifies it, but there's some weirdness along the way.
So, I mean, that's a lot about the story and characters. Like, is the play holding up?
The play's pretty good overall. The main criticisms I'd have, and these are at least somewhat self-inflicted, I'm playing on the highest difficulty, which makes the enemies both very bullet spongy and able to drop you extremely, extremely quickly. But probably more relevantly, virtually every enemy you fight will be wearing a helmet, which results in the first headshot doing no damage.
Good God, really?
Which is a problem in a game that, like, revolves around stealth, where you need to, like, snipe people and kill them in one hit in order to not alert the entire camp. So you basically are obligated to use armor-piercing ammunition after a point. So that's a little weird. On the plus side, it has some, you know, really crazy weapons. They also added a what they call an expedition feature, which is basically the plot justification is that one of your allies is a helicopter pilot, and he'll get tips on these, you know, bandit outposts, and you can go raid them for resources. But they're all done to be very overtly, like, all over the country and just kind of completely different settings. So I've done one that was a abandoned aircraft carrier that washed up on shore. One on Alcatraz. I just completed one that was basically where the crash site of the International Space Station. I think my next one that I haven't done yet is like an abandoned nuclear reactor.
Okay.
So like, so definitely, that adds a lot of, you know, almost kind of a what if type of thing to the game.
Yeah, so, yeah, it definitely ups the variety.
Yeah, so I've enjoyed it. Having allies is a lot of fun. Having a giant boar that can just, you know, take a running start and like send an entire group of enemies flying is always fun.
Sounds fun.
Very cool. Anything else, David?
No, I think that's it.
Cool. Let's go on to the multiplayer.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I've been thinking about the idea of little kid patience, which so often we'll reference to be kind of the write-off for why we could get through otherwise unbearable things in old games. And I'm just kind of wondering, what will be the little kid patience of our age? What things do we tolerate now just simply because we don't know any alternatives that we will write off as impossible in the future?
Asking us to be prognosticators here. I will start us out here with Ollie, who says, I'll say that we have already moved past this phase, but motion controls. The last generation had them shoehorned into a lot of things that felt needless. And for all of the Wii's sales success, I think the controls really held the console back. There's a reason why very few games on that console are considered, quote, best in their series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, we've talked about this on other shows. Here recently, talking about motion controls, touch controls, and things of that nature, and just kind of how limiting that is, and how that was just a weird little fad, and it's going to make those games really, really hard to go back to.
Yes,
yeah,
and really hard to port.
They kind of violate, you know, all of the principles of like UI design.
A little bit. It's just weird. Like it even just from like a goal standpoint, like, oh, we're doing this to make you feel immersed. But in reality, all that it does is remind me that I have a controller in my hand. Like it just it does not actually like meet the goal or requirement for, you know. Well,
I would like to point out that Wii U has UI backwards in the name.
Does it? It does. Huh. Weird. Yeah. I don't know. I'm really happy that I have a Wii U. There are lots of very good games on it. But yeah, what a weird time in games. Looking at you, Kinect. Let's see here. David, what does Roop say?
Roop says, the fact that you can't listen to audio messages, etc., while exploring. Looking at you, Shadow of War.
Yeah, like BioShock is kind of the only game that did this right. You can do it in Metal Gear Solid 5 as well. But yeah, if you can't explore while you're listening to audio messages, screw that. Even like Doom 2016 messes that up. Huh. Let's see here.
I mean, it's kind of understandable. There's a cost for games to do that, right? They have to have people record all the audio to do that.
Oh, no. I mean, just like literally like audio messages, just like in BioShock, where if you pick up the audio logs, it just plays looking around. Like the most obnoxious version of it is if you have to stand next to the thing while the audio plays. And then if you step away, it restarts when you come back. Like, that's what Doom 2016
That makes does. More sense.
Yeah.
And if the boundaries for that are not clear.
Right.
So today, while playing Fallout or whatever, New Eden, I literally spent like 20 minutes trying to hear an audio message because you have to talk to the, NPC... have to stand right next to them, and then it's an open world, and if an enemy wanders by, they will proceed to stop talking and go chase the enemy around trying to kill them.
Oh, geez.
Oh no.
Yeah. You can't control that at all. Blah.
Right. Which is funny, because for their, like, actual story dialogue, they actually thought of that, because once the fight's over, when you go talk to them, they'll say, oh, like I was saying, and start at the point in the dialogue where they left off. So it's like you knew it was a problem.
Yeah. Anyways. Ben, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says, the monotony of task and content for content's sake is something I predict and hope will be a relic of this era. Basically, I hope to discover that in the future, Ubisoft went under.
That's a lot of people that you're hoping to unemploy. Alex. No, that's I understand what they're talking about. That's going to relate to mine when we get to it. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Casey say?
Casey says quick time events, unbearable generally with some specific good points, but as AAA games become more accessible and give more options to remove them, like the 2018 Spider-Man, I hope they just stop programming them in at all. Press F to pay respect. Also, here's a niche article from 2015 about QTEs, which from 4 years ago says the QTE is dead. Long live the QTE.
Oh, my God. Press F to pay respects is 4 years ago.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able. Nope. I'm turning into dust. So yeah. Show's over. Cole's dust now.
It's not a bad look.
Yeah. Weirdly, my voice is disembodied from the dust that my cat is. Nope. Yeah. No, she's shitting in the dust. That's me now. Yeah. She was waiting in that. She was waiting for that the whole time.
She's pressing F to pay respect.
Yeah.
It's like a modern giving tree.
Yeah. No, QuickTime events, just for accessibility's sake, it's super weird when you go back to a game and like you're walking up to a door and it's like twist the analog stick to open, you know, to turn the valve to open the hatch. It's like, can I just press a button? Like, yeah. It's again, all this is doing is reminding me that I have a controller in my hand. Don't do that.
Well, I remember playing, I mean, games like God of War were literally to open a chest in the game. It was a quick time event where you had to mash the R1 button as fast as you could. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, so intense at the time. And just like it's not aged
well. Like opening a chest. Like, you know, like imagine if you had to do that every time you opened a fridge. Like, ah!
So I think the worst I've ever seen is Dying Light, where the entire final boss fight is just a series of quick time events in the spirit of like Indigo Prophecy, and those are literally the only quick time events in the game.
It just especially when the quick time event is stands in place of the regular engine for an encounter. No, it's really bad. Like going back to older games with QTEs. Like, I don't know, for as much as Resident Evil 4 is a really good game, it's kind of bullshit that there are just button prompts that pop up in the middle of cutscenes and you just like have to press them in order to not get a game over. It's a very strange decision that we all thought was okay. Good.
I'm not completely against QuickTime events, but I do think that you can implement them very poorly to make a very, very negative experience. I'm thinking specifically of the one cart jump one in Resident Evil 4.
Oh yeah, the one that is broken on the PC port that I discovered.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, no, just there's something I had to like reduce the frame rate from 60 to 30 in order for it to recognize that I was pressing the buttons fast enough to pull myself up onto the track.
Oh Lord!
And to be fair, it wasn't far from broken in its original implementation either. But.
True. Yeah. Very bad. Dan writes, Skyrim-esque fetch quests. Give me a reason and a meaning to collect X number of items with backstory, context, and enriching the plot. Fallout New Vegas is a good example, and there are plenty of others, so it can be done. With a plethora of games now, I and many others just don't have the tolerance to bow down to these uninspired, gamey requests, and I certainly won't be doing this in the future. P.S. I do like Skyrim generally. It's just this aspect of this aspect fit the brief. I don't hate the player, hate the game. No, we weren't going to come after you for having a quibble with Skyrim stuff. Yeah, there was like an era like early in the 20 teens where man, there was just a lot of like, oh, MMOs do this, so people must like doing it. So let's put that kind of quest in here, you know. So take a look at like, man, like Dragon Age 2 to Dragon Age Inquisition, what kind of just the difference in the kinds of quests that they had you do. Yeah, a lot of go collect this. The Witcher 3 gets around that quite a bit. primarily by not really having any fetch quests. Like each of those side quests is a good like little telltale short story kind of deal. But like if you do have to go like collect X number of things, it's like to get the ingredients to mix up a cool potion to kill the griffin that is killing the town, stuff like that, right?
Well, I love the alchemy system. That's a feature I wish more games would implement.
It's good. Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is the things that I like are good, and the things that you like are not necessarily good. If I dislike them, then they're bad.
truly wise words.
David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, loot crates and loot boxes and games. One day, publishers are going to wake up and people will realize that gamers are willing to pay higher prices up front, say $70 to $100, if it means it's a complete game and we never get nagged again in-game. Either that, or countries will ban the practice as gambling to minors. I'm hoping for the former, but I think the latter is more likely.
Yeah, I can see that, like specifically to the question, like what will we see as just unnecessary patience taxing bullshit, like straight up gambling elements in games like that.
Yeah.
It's weird that we put up with it now. I understand, you know, that it is, you know, it is hinging on a certain, let's say, exploitable aspect of people's personalities. Let's say I understand why it's done, but also I don't understand why it's put up with.
I feel like I wish I still had the faith that Greg has that, you know, America might ever ban anything that leads to corporate profits.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, also, video games are new and they don't spend a lot of money trying to lobby the lawmakers. So therefore, they are fair game for regulation. Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. let's see here. And finally, Ben, what does David say?
David says, generally speaking, load times when moving between areas and games, not counting the initial load. On my vanilla PS4, Outer Worlds is almost too much to stand. Fast travel to ship, load time. Ship to travel to different planet, load time. Leaving ship door to the surface of said planet, yep, more load time. Yep, he's not wrong.
That's too bad for the particularly ship travel to different planet, because at least on PC that's almost like a joke, in that like you'll select the planet and then basically immediately your AI will be and we're here.
Yeah. So like taking this to a mechanic that I've definitely noticed, like very ham-handed ways to disguise load time as opposed to dropping you to a load screen is a thing that I think really stands out to me in games from like say 10 years ago.
Yeah. Which is, there will be, once they figure out the load times, there will be infinitely less hallways in games.
Yeah. Or doors that get stuck.
No more elevators. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, that's what you all said. And we usually go through these, you know, and give our own answers to them. For me, it's related to what Alex said about Ubisoft kind of stuff. Climbing to the top of a tower to reveal more of the map. I don't like that. I don't care for it one bit. It's not something that I liked that happened in Zelda. It felt like a chore. Getting to the top of each of those towers in order to read more of the area. I didn't necessarily like it. It's neat to get a little bit of the lay of the land and get these vistas and stuff like that. That vista should be its own reward to me. It shouldn't be mechanically necessary in order to have parts of the interface unveiled to my mind.
Shadow of the Colossus did that, right? Where you can just climb up a tower just to look around.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yep. Yeah. No, I just down with map towers would be my request.
To be fair, those are gone from at least Far Cry.
Cool. so more of them follow suit, please. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is we need to usher in a post-apocalypse to make sure there are no more map towers.
Yes. Nothing in the real world or in fiction should be taller than the Washington Monument, so you cannot climb to the top of it and get a good view and fill out your auto map. Just give me the fucking map. David, how about you?
I'm going with nothing. If you want a vision of the future, imagine a microtransaction stomping on a human face forever.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Bleak. Let's see.
I'm hoping for microtransactions. I'm also hoping for permadeath as being a thing that kind of goes the way of the dodo.
Okay.
So when you say permadeath, basically, you mean the go ahead.
Yeah, like the roguelike thing.
Hmm. Got it.
I think it basically boils down to mistaking wasting your time for increasing difficulty.
Hmm.
So ironically enough, I hope that permadeath has permadeath.
Ben, how about you?
I want to say things like, not necessarily game features, but things like managing memory on your console and like install time on a game. I think those are going to be seen as silly, like in like 10 or 15 years. Like, it'll be similar to like downloading a song from the early 2000s where it like took a couple hours to download a 4-minute song, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If not enough people were on Kaza. Yeah, no, just it's like it'll be weird to install stuff when streaming game services are the thing.
With Stadia, you don't install anything.
Right. You don't even buy the box.
Just pop it open and play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that also means a future in which you don't own anything.
Well, I mean, in a present where you don't own anything.
Well,
in a present where you don't want to own anything.
In the present, you at least own a computer, usually.
Yeah. I don't know. This is already a long episode. That's all right. Let's see here. And then let's see. Dennis, how about you?
I think the concept of the looter shooter is going to go by the wayside.
Yeah.
Like, I want either a good shooter with, you know, a couple meaningfully different guns, or I want a loot fest with, you know, Diablo-style looting. I don't want to grind for 6 hours to get the gun that I will never, ever, ever use because it's slightly weaker than the other gun that I've already got.
Yeah.
Kind of the preying on humans side of things makes me understand why that genre is a thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just ready for it to not be a thing.
It's been a while since I've like heard anybody say anything glowing about one of those.
The highest praise I've heard is like, oh, hey, the opening to Destiny 2 doesn't suck now.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, who knows? Maybe the industry will have moved on from it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm saying is maybe we're already there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you for posting this, Dennis.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Let's see. Ben and David, you both had similar ones. What's Ben? What's going on at Valve? New Half-Life?
No details, but they announced that Half-Life Alyx is going to be more details are going to be given out on Thursday, so a day before this episode comes out, but 2 days after we record. VR Half-Life, something to do with Alyx.
Yeah.
Go.
Maybe this is what the Idle Thumb guys were hired to do, possibly.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. I have no idea. I just like this is depressing to me because I don't know. I'm not going to be able to play it. Like, I don't have a VR headset that plugs into a computer. I've just got the PSVR.
I don't have a real VR headset.
No, I've got the toy one. I've got the Fisher Price one. Because that's all I felt comfortable investing.
And that's Orange the one that has came out support. On PS whatever, right?
Oh, no. Orange Box came out on the PS3, but like this is, I mean, Valve has a vested interest in a VR platform, so there's no yeah, I don't know, like it's
good. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the scope of the game if this game is like what's going to try and sell VR units for people, because if it's like, you know, if it's like a 20 or 30 hour game, if it's like a full like standalone game, then mm-hmm. I could see this being something that would start people on the track for getting VR.
Definitely make the choice if somebody is curious about VR and doesn't know which one to get or is ambivalent. Yeah. Like if this is exclusive to Vive or to the whatever Steam's one is, the Element or whatever.
Index.
Yeah, Index. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? It's hard. I could speculate on what it might be, but I will be proven wrong by the time this comes out. So it's wise of them to say this isn't Half-Life 3 at the start, just to,
yeah,
who knows,
head that off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although good God, the headlines covering this are the trolliest headlines I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, just because Like the joke has become a meme, has become, I don't know. So like, this is something that came to light when we did the Watch Out for Fireballs about Half-Life 2. A whole bunch of the voice cast of Half-Life 2 is dead.
Ooh, like, really?
So the voice actor for Eli Vance, he passed away. The voice actor for Wallace Breen, he passed away. Yeah, just like they're dropping like flies because it's been, you know, 12 years since they've done anything with the franchise.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure it wasn't because of that, but.
Well, I mean, no, but people died. That's because okay. Time passed. It's correlation, not causation. I agree.
I'm trying to think, is that the only major, like, I don't know, like, you know, game people waiting for that may or may not ever come out we have now? Because, you know, Duke Nukem Forever eventually came out. What's the bird dog game?
Yeah, you're thinking of The Last Guardian that came out. Final Fantasy 15 came out. Yeah, just a bunch of vaporware came out. That's a big one. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Like, this could be exciting. I don't know. It may lead to me like pre-ordering something. I have no idea. It's just hard to say without more details outside of this pre-announcement.
David, yeah. To answer your question, is any game from Rocksteady?
Oh, yeah, there we go. Point. Yeah. Let's see here. So, Ben, you shared another one, that Polygon list of board game things?
Yeah, there's just an article about board games of this decade, kind of a decade in review. The only thing I want to share about it is it says at the end of it that Terra Mystica has, like, started it all, and that was a game that, like, created all the other games. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted a big thumbs up because that's one of my favorite board games that I've played ever. So
Terra Mystica, you said?
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. I've got one. It'll be real quick. Going to talk about, so Tetris Effect is a very good game, speaking of VR stuff, although you can play Tetris mm-hmm. Effect without VR. Something that is cool is that, let me see here, the team and the team is teaming up with Limited Run Games to put out a few different versions of the Tetris Effect soundtrack on vinyl. I'm not necessarily interested on the vinyl portion of this, but if it means that, you know, it might come to streaming services, then fuck yeah, Cole has more work in music.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. They're also doing like a physical re-release of the PS4 game as well. But yeah, Tetris Effect's music is good, and I imagine it being good even without the, you know, Tetris mechanics synergizing with the visuals synergizing with the music. And I am looking forward to listening to this if it comes to, you know, a non-vinyl thing. Not that I have anything against vinyl. It's just, you know, I don't have a turntable or anything. I don't feel like buying one, installing one, etc.
But yeah. And speaking of good music here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for the final hit, Undertale. One, I didn't know Undertale was getting a live concert, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But they've also revealed that the Undertale live concert is going to have choose-your-own-adventure aspects, where at critical junctures, the audience will be able to vote on whether to fight or save the different characters that the music is from. And they said that will lead to them playing different music at the end, just like how the game has three different endings.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. I also cannot see a world in which this doesn't just disappoint people, because the very first voting instance is either going to go save or fight. Mm-hmm. And then all the min-maxers are going to be dedicated that it has to be that from then on out. And then, so like, it's just, there's just going to be this whole like meta voting war going on under the concert.
Yeah. Just as the different factions like rearrange their seats and all of a sudden, yeah.
Yes. That's, everyone should be able to see who voted for what. This should not be secret ballot. But they, you know, the person putting on the concert has kind of intoned that, oh, well, you know, we'll find ways to play everything. He said, you know, it'll have its own surprises. You might even be able to get different endings. Like, it's all been very wink and smile.
Yeah.
But, you know, lovely game, a lovely idea for the concert. I'm sure people who are there for it will be good sports about it. Mm-hmm. And here's to good music being played.
Yeah, specifically, and the article goes into this, so we might as well talk about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the most popular song from the game, Megalovania, only plays if you do the genocide route, kill everybody and fight that runs final boss. Like, when asked about this, the director, you know, the person who's putting this together, says like, yeah, we're doing our own thing, so who knows if you're going to be able to hear. Like, I can't imagine them doing a live Undertale music event and not playing Megalovania, even despite the choices people make. So I think that it's going to be a little bit more, let's say, superficial in terms of the choices that people are going to get to make, and I think that they're going to get the hits anyway.
Yeah, I could see it being a what do we play next choice, not a what do we play choice.
Yeah. But it's a cool idea. I'd be interested to hear, like, I've heard, you know, fan covers of Undertale tracks, and those are always very good. Tend to be very good. I would be curious to hear what like an orchestrated version is, because I, in my head, I really associate the game's arrangements, the, you know, 16-bit style stuff, with how those are supposed to sound.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out. They've only announced one show so far, I think, but it seems like they have intent to make it a bigger thing.
Cool. Good music. Now I'm going to go listen to that soundtrack again. Yeah. Lots of video game music stuff here. How y'all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. I'm trying to think of, you know, business stuff at the start here, but Dennis, you've the Deck of Wonders crowdfunding.
Yeah, I've businessed my business on that.
Yes, you've businessed your business. You know, the regular stuff to do. So I talked about playing Control here recently. I did that as a Hex Crank first hour. This will be the third of these that I've put out here in the most recent like season or run of those. So go to youtube.com/duckfeedtv to watch that playthrough, to hear that commentary, along with I did Moons of Madness and then Luigi's Mansion 3 as well. And that is also where I am archiving the Hexcrank live streams. So those are just about caught up. A lot of video editing going on, but fortunately I like editing video. That's everything so far. So, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams live on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can watch my streams at twitch.tv/deckofwonders, and I'm on Twitter at deckofwonders with underscores between each word.
Cool.
I'm David Meyersmith. You can find me on The Level at Duckfeed TV.
and I'm Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
and stick around for some titles. Okay, so I didn't write any down.
I got a couple for you.
Okay. Dennis, what you got?
Pulling it up here. All right, I've got Salad Burp.
Yuck.
Way back at the start.
Okay.
I've got Defenestration.
I also had that.
Followed by Better Than Hugh, spelled H-E-W.
Okay. H-E-W?
Okay. Yeah, Better Than Hugh.
Okay.
Because directly after Defenestration, there was Better Than Hugh.
Gotcha. Let's see. What you got, David?
Oh, sorry. Did you have any others?
That's mine.
Okay. So I had Only Hugh Can Prevent Forest Fires. I had Defenestration. I add Wii U has UI backwards, and I had Show's Over, Cool's Dust and Now.
Okay, Ben, what you got?
I am a subset of Dennis. I had Defenestration and Better Than Hugh.
Okay. But between the two of those, I like Better Than Hugh better. So get me the spelling H-E-W or H-H-U-E?
I had H-E-W.
Is H-E-W a word?
Yeah, like Hugh. Like yeah. Okay. Because
I think Defenestration stands on its own, so we can go straight to... Or go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I don't know how to spell defenestration. That doesn't make it look like defenestation. Like it just like it's it, it is. I believe that
even better.
My case is that it doesn't. It is a joke that works better in speech than it does in text. And I think Better Than Hugh is a. I think Better Than Hugh is a better. It just works better in a title written out that somebody else see in their app.
I would argue that Hugh is an inherently funny word.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Like, all right, yeah, I'm all down. That's okay. Where I was headed anyway.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go. I've got miles to go before I sleep tonight. So
I'm going to listen to Megalovania and then figure out about getting to bed here.
Cool.
It really bothers me. If I was to go before I sleep, like you're using a unit of distance to measure time, that really bothers me.
No,
like, the castle run in 6 parsecs.
Exactly. All right, take care, everybody.
Night, guys. Bye. See ya.